Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. This is episode number 91. And I'd also like to welcome our Inner Circle members who might be listening as well. My name is Tim Topham, and I'm the teacher behind the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the blog at timtopham.com, and the Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community. And I'm delighted to have you tuning in to today's conversation. As usual, show notes and full transcript are available at timtopham.com/episode91. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different as it's the part of, well, kind of in the middle of business month now. And we've always got lots of discussions going on about business in the Inner Circle community forums. And so I thought we'd welcome one of my members onto the show to discuss some of her business ideas and give us some coaching about how she can continue to grow her blog and her studio and her online marketing efforts to get the most out of everything that she's doing and to try and fit it into her already busy studio and her family life. So it's going to be a little bit flipped around today. I might be doing a little bit more talking than I usually do. We're going to see how it goes. I think it's going to be a lot of fun and hopefully really useful for other teachers out there who may be wondering about this whole online business and online marketing aspects of their studio. So my guest today loves to teach. In fact, she reckons that piano teaching has got to be the best teaching gig around. On her blog, The Unfinished Lesson, she shares the best teaching resources that make her life, and hopefully yours as well, just a little bit easier and more fun. She also loves to play video games and watch action movies with her husband. She's got two twin boys, keeping her very busy as well. Welcome to the show, Rosemary Penner.
Hi, thank you for having me, Tim.
It's an absolute pleasure to hang out with one of our members, and particularly someone who's doing so many very, very cool things in their studio and working so hard to not just focus on the piano teaching, but look a little bit more holistically about ways to generate income from their experience and help other teachers along the way. So congratulations for all that you're doing, and I hope this can be really helpful for you.
Thanks.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and your studio as well.
Okay. Well, I have a boutique studio. It's ranged from 12 to about 20 students over the years. This last year, I included a travel lab. So actually, my students do music lab time, which has been really helpful. So yeah, now I have two iPads so that my kids can have one and I'm working on the other. So that's kind of the studio part of it. And then, yeah,
Yeah, you talked a lot in the forums when you were introducing this idea of a traveling music lab, and it sparked a whole heap of discussions and great questions from people. What does it mean? What are you talking about with this?
So I did a lot of research, like Leah Levis, Jennifer Fox. They both have great resources. But because I travel to my students' homes, then it means that I had to do it a little differently. So Jennifer Fox has music lab task cards, which have been hugely helpful. And I've been using those. And so that way we can do ear training and sight reading and like everything, creativity. And usually I have one student at the piano and then the other sibling, they're on the iPad with headphones and they're doing more review, but they don't realize they're doing theory because it's usually games. Mm-hmm. So I'm tricking them when I'm introduced to teaching. And then after 30 minutes, they switch. And then some of my students who do better with one-on-one and wouldn't do well having a concurrent lesson, then they have a 45-minute lesson. So about 30 minutes at the piano and then another 15, where, yeah, we use the iPad or sometimes I bring games. And it's more one-on-one when we do that lab time. But yeah.
Right. And what made you decide to travel to students instead of having them come to you?
We do not have the space for that. It's an open concept. And with the boys being young, the house is not clean. It is not quiet. And so rather than having that stress, it's kind of my me time. And it's nice when I travel because I listen to podcasts like yours. And so I get my professional development in and I get some time for myself, so that I have a chance to miss all of my men. So.
I find as well that traveling time in a car is such a great opportunity to absorb some great content through podcasts. It's the ultimate way to do it. And in fact, now that I'm working from home and not traveling to work as I was last year, I'm finding I'm getting less podcast time. I'm missing it. Okay, so how did you decide to set up a blog, or what made you want to do that?
You know what? I always have lots of ideas. I remember one of my bosses told me my problem isn't ideas, it's that I try and implement all of them. So as I've gotten older, I've gotten better about choosing which ones. And yeah, my husband knew getting into the relationship that he was dating a teacher, which means that you hear a lot about teaching. But I thought, why don't I blog about it? And then he doesn't have to hear about it quite as much. So that was actually part of the reason. But I thought, you know, if I can help other teachers, I've found so much value in the blogs that I've been reading. And so if I can help other teachers as well, I mean, that would be fantastic. It's helped my teaching so much. So, yeah.
So passing the love on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's great. And it's exactly the right reason to start a blog. None of us who I think have been successful with it started it as a money-making venture. You start it because you have a desire to help other people and you want to share ideas. That's the whole point of a blog. So well done for coming at it the right direction. But now I guess part of your question today is going to be about, well, how can I, is it possible to actually monetize that work that I'm doing there? So let's get on to, you've got some kind of big questions and then some sort of smaller ones, I think, from our discussion. So let me know, what's some of the big questions that you've got about the work that you're doing?
Sure. Well, I guess the first one is, how do you transition from providing advice and giving freebies for your readers to providing paid products that help your readers? I think as a teacher, I just want to keep teaching, but if I go towards monetizing, I guess switching that headspace, right? And how to do that would be the first big question.
Mm. Yeah. So I think you're right. When it comes to that flip in attitude, it's somewhat of a mindset change. And I think even if the blog is a side business or whatever the online aspects, if it's a side business, it still has to be a business, and you've got to think like a business owner if you're going to become serious about it, which is the biggest hassle, because as soon as you start thinking in that way, things become more time consuming and you've got to put more time and effort into it, and that can start to take away from other things that you're doing. So there is a little bit of a catch-22 in that if you want to grow something to the point where it can make an income that's, you know, reasonable, then you've got to put more time into it, and that's going to take time away from other things. So there's always this juggling and balancing act, which is what I experienced up until the end of last year when I was working full time at the college and running the blog and the podcast and doing all and the community. And eventually one of them had to give as they developed. But you're in a great position because you've got the teaching work that you're doing, and that's running along really, really well. And you're building up this on the side. I think that's a great way to do it. It's a side hustle, as they'd call it. And as you build your side hustle, you can see how it can either work alongside what you're doing, or will it actually become bigger than your teaching and you reduce the number of students, or maybe you don't want that to happen. So you've really got to think a little bit about what the end goal is, what the outcome is. What would you like it to look like? Have you thought about that?
I've thought about it, but yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for me to envision what it is. I think what I see is something that grows very slowly. I don't want anything growing super fast. My kids are still young, but I know that every year they need us a little less. Well, not need isn't quite the right word, but they need less time.
I know what you mean. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I know that I can build it up each year and I can put more into it. But yeah, so this year it needs to be small. Next year it can be slightly bigger and so on. And then once the kids are older, you know, I hear once they leave the house, then all of a sudden it's like free time.
Absolutely. I think you're in a great space with this. You're already thinking about helping other people and their needs, as we said before. So if it's coming to monetization, and we should talk about what that actually is. So for those who don't know, monetizing a blog is the term we give if we're writing lots of great articles and all that kind of stuff, but we're not actually getting any money in return for it. How do we actually start converting some of those viewers and readers into people who will pay for something? So Rosemary, let me tell you what I did, which was when I got a fair audience on the blog. So going back, I think this is about two or three years ago. This is when the genesis came about for my Piano Flicks Teaching Pop Piano course. And this was an 8-part video series helping any teacher be able to teach pop if they had no idea how to do it. I knew that this was something that people needed because they'd talked about it, they'd asked me questions. I've got endless email questions about it. And so I knew that there was a need. So I thought, okay, I just made a conscious decision. I'm going to create a course and I'm going to sell a course and I'm going to see how it all works. I know you listen to business podcasts and things. So I was doing the same thing. I was reading a lot. I was listening to podcasts to work out how to do this. How do you actually technologically do it? How should you promote it? All of those kind of things. Do I do a launch discount? Do I use affiliates, which are, you know, people who are encouraged to promote my product and get a little bonus for doing so. So all of those things I learned from listening to other people, but I had to just say, right, I'm going to do this. And that was the goal for the end of, I think it was 2014 maybe, or 2015. I actually can't remember exactly. And that was the goal. And I literally started probably 6 months earlier in the preparation of it and starting to think about what would the modules entail and recording it. And so that, I think, was the real genesis of me converting my blog into a business. And so I'm thinking for you, it might be a good thing to think about as you grow your readership and your numbers, what's one product that I could create that I could then sell and really put all your efforts into it and get it out there and see how it goes. Because as we all know, in these kind of online business things, you learn as you go and you make mistakes and you pivot, you change, you make some more mistakes and you learn how it goes. There's no easy course to take that will solve and tell you how to do it perfectly. And it, you know, every industry is a bit different.
Absolutely.
What do you think? Does that make some sense for you?
Yeah, it does.
Have you worked out what your readers would particularly be interested in if you were to create something?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a struggle. I've tried surveys. I've tried asking in posts. People read, but, usually the comments I get, I'm not quite sure what my audience wants. So, yeah, trying to figure that out. Sometimes I feel like I'm writing a little blindly or I'm basing it on things I'm reading online. And other teachers are going, I don't know what to do about this. And so I go, okay.
I can write about that. Well, that's great. Yeah. That's a great way to look at it. Who is your blog? And be reasonably specific.
Like in terms of who's reading it?
Well, actually, let's do this in two ways. Let's first talk about who your ideal audience is. Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk about your demographics and who's actually reading it.
I think that my ideal audience is a teacher who's passionate about teaching, who wants to try new things, probably has a little bit of a tech focus since I tend to use a lot of tech in my stuff, but also someone who's looking for balance. I've had areas in my life where I haven't had balance, and fingers crossed, I've learned my lesson after all those times. So I do tend to talk a lot about, what is your ideal studio? What is it that you want? And then creating the resources. Like I talk a lot about policies and kind of the administrative stuff, but then also some of the teaching stuff and the relationships. So that's kind of a lot of what I tend to write about these days is having that balance and how do you have a studio life that that balances everything and you can be fulfilled in it.
It's so great to hear you talk like this because I can see and hear the passion. We're on video, obviously. People listening are only hearing an audio, but I can see, you know, you are so passionate about this and getting that balance right.
Everywhere.
What was that?
I said, you see my hands moving everywhere.
You are a hand talker. This is great. I didn't actually realize that this was what your blog is about.
Okay.
And I wonder whether you could rethink potentially, now this could be a big change and not required at the moment, but your domain is the unfinished lesson.
Yeah.
Right. Now that to me doesn't say what you've just told me about what you're trying to do. That's a little bit of a problem. Is that domain something that you have had for some time previously to what you've been doing now?
Well, I've been blogging about a year and a half. The reason I chose it is I feel like as teachers, we never really stop learning. So it's an unfinished lesson. That lesson, you keep going. And then actually at the time, my students, oftentimes they would go, what do you mean lesson is over already? And like, well, it's time to finish lesson now. And so I felt like, you know, we always in lesson time, even with my students, we're always building on what we do. So that's actually why I chose the name was this whole idea. Yeah, we're always learning and we're always, that lesson just, it never ends. It just changes from week to week.
Okay. That makes more sense. It's still a little bit different to what you were just telling me about your ideal audience and who you're trying to help. That would be the only thing I'd be thinking about. So that's one possible thing to consider. What about your actual, you've looked at your analytics, I assume, numbers, demographic, where people are coming from, how many people, readers you get and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but it's through WordPress and WordPress only gives me general information. Right. So I can kind of see where people are reading and I've been very surprised and sometimes tell my husband, oh my goodness, somebody's reading in like whatever country. So, yeah, I mean, I have that information, but I don't have tons of information. I switched over to AWeber so I can get a better sense of, like, I have an auto sequence, and so then I can see what people are reading and what they're clicking on. And it's helped in terms of that, like being able to track some of that information.
All right, we better, just before we go on to AWeber, because that word is something that's not going to be familiar to some people, so we'll talk about that in just a sec. Firstly, you mentioned WordPress, so your blog is on WordPress. Now, WordPress have two options, and most people would probably be aware, well, if you've got a WordPress site, you can either have a WordPress site that's hosted by them and run by them on WordPress.com, or you do a self-hosted site on something called WordPress.org, where you have to go and get your own hosting and it gives you more flexibility and that sort of thing. I started with the .com, as most people do, because it's absolutely 100% free. It's easy. You drag and drop things. Great way to get started. And I encourage other people to start that way if you want to dip your toe in the water. Which way have you gone at the moment?
The .com. Okay. I switched over to it.
You've gone self-hosted?
No, still with WordPress. No, I didn't switch from them yet. So it's something I'm considering because I think then I can do a little bit more in terms of information and what I want to do with the blog. So,
yeah, I think, and I would encourage people who are listening, if they have WordPress sites hosted at WordPress, which means you haven't got your own host and things, then you will be limited in what you can do. Limited by the number of plugins you can have. When I asked you about analytics as well, so WordPress provides some analytics, but there's this fantastic piece of free software called Google Analytics. Google knows everything about everyone, of course, and it can tell you everything about the most minute detail about the visitors to your site and where they're from, how long they spend, all this kind of stuff. And I think that's only available if you have a self-hosted WordPress site. So I guess another thing I'd be suggesting, perhaps Rosemary, for you and other people who are listening who are in a similar position, if you've gone and you've started a blog and you can see you're getting some traction, you would like to grow it, you're getting good feedback about it, if you would like to take it to the point where you could potentially make some money from it, you'd really have to migrate it across and get it into a self-hosted system, which will allow you to do so much more from it. And as you probably know, hundreds of thousands, probably millions of sites on the web and big sites are hosted on WordPress. And it's just incredibly powerful and simple, relatively simple to use. Is that something you've considered?
Yeah, I was thinking about moving to the .org. Life all of a sudden got a little hectic, and so I had to put on the back burner for a bit. But it is something that I want to move into, and I just need to figure out timing-wise when I'm going to do that.
Okay. Yeah, it is a bit of a pain, but, yeah, it's one of those things you've got to do eventually. So on onto Aweber. Now, Aweber is an email autoresponder system. So this is what people use when they've built a website and they have subscribers and they'd like to email them, and particularly in an automatic fashion. So you've recently set that up, which I think is fantastic. It's a great step. Have you set up some automatic sequences where people are getting some content once they sign up?
Yeah, so every week I make sure that they get an update on what's happened on the blog, but then I also have the autoresponder sequence in terms of, finding out maybe what they would like, letting them know maybe some of the most popular blogs, you know, just asking for feedback, but also trying to give them value as well so that they want to actually read those, because I've gotten ones I haven't wanted to read, so trying to avoid that.
And everyone's inbox are full of newsletters from all sorts of different people. So yeah, you have to make it as interesting and engaging as you possibly can. One way that people do that is through Roundup. I don't know if you've thought of doing kind of curating other people's good content as well as you creating your own. So you're doing one blog post a week by the looks of your site.
Yes.
Yeah, which I think, and you've kept on that schedule for some time. Like, I'm very impressed because I know how hard it is to do that. So nice work. Regularity in blogging is really, really important. So that's great. One of the other things you could do if you would like a little bit more content, but you don't have to create it yourself, is just find, you know, your top three articles from other bloggers in your space and pop that out on your weekly email or something like that. That's another little way of providing some good value.
Okay.
You mentioned before about surveys. And surveying your audience to try and find out what they want.
Okay.
Well, have you been using software to do that? How have you been doing that so far?
I think that one I did through Google Forms, just because it was really easy for me to do. And I figured that way the information I got, they've got great spreadsheets. It can show me on the diagrams and stuff. It's very easy. I know that there's other ways you can do it. I just was trying to find something that would be something I already knew and that I could use.
I think with surveys and finding out what people want, just as a couple of solutions or suggestions for you. One is a piece of software called Typeform, which is what I use for surveys. It's free. And one of the things that puts people off surveys, I think, is that they're not very user-friendly or they don't feel good to use. And I don't know if you've done one of my surveys recently, but Typeform is just, it feels good. It, like, the user interface they've designed, everyone loves. And people really enjoy filling them out. So that's a real win, I think. I encourage anyone who's doing surveys to check out Typeform. SurveyMonkey used to be something I used, but they're really not kept up with the times, I don't think. So I think there's much better options out there.
Yeah. No, I stopped. SurveyMonkey for everything.
Yeah. They're really just, I don't know what they're doing. But anyway, another thing you could do is offer an incentive. If you're not getting too much feedback from people, then offering an incentive like a free worksheet for their survey results, or going to a draw to win an Amazon voucher, which is nice and easy to send out to people. I don't know. That could be something that gets some more responses for you. Also, too, I ask in my first email that is automatically sent to people when they subscribe, you know, what's your biggest struggle? What would you really like my help with? And get them to actually reply back to you personally. I think you might have you thought of doing that?
I think that is my first autoresponder.
Excellent.
Is something like that. Yeah. And then I tried to make sure every autoresponder, that whatever it was, there was a specific question that I asked so that I could hopefully get more information.
Yeah, brilliant. Really good thinking. It also helps spam filters realize that you're not spam too. So if someone is responding to your emails, that means that they're interested in them enough to reply. So that's a really good thing to do for anyone who's listening and setting up email sequences. Okay, so what are some of the other questions that you've got that I could potentially help you with?
I think, how do you increase your readership in a meaningful way? I mean, you can do ads, you can, my goodness, like the information out there is insane in terms of what you can do. So yeah, how do you increase your readership so that you kind of get more data in terms of what it is that that audience is wanting so that you can help them?
I think right up front, you've got to be different in some way as much as you can and really make your goal and your passion and the way you're thinking clear to people, which is why I came back to, you know, what is your ideal audience and who are you writing for and what are you writing about? And you're talking about the balance, being able to balance your life and your work as a music teacher. I think that that's great. That sets you apart. It's a little bit different. I think another thing that could set you apart could be talking about the experience of it being a traveling teacher, because mm-hmm. I don't know how many blogs there are that are on that topic specifically. Have you found any?
No, I haven't. Teaching? No, yeah. It seems like people want to get out of that pretty quickly. Just for my life, I mean, it actually works out really well. You know, I don't know what'll happen in the future, but for now, like, that's our ideal situation is me to travel. So,
yeah. But there'll be other people in that same position who would value help with ideas on that and how to make it work and how do you do mileage and how do you keep siblings out of the piano room when their other child having a lesson, all that kind of stuff.
You know what? Actually, when it's the little ones, I let like the toddlers sit on my lap, and I've had cats and dogs sitting next to me, or one cat was sitting and looking over my shoulder. So yeah, I tend to just go with the flow because, I mean, it's family life. It happens whether you're there or not. So yeah.
I started as a traveling teacher as well, as many of us do. And I remember I used to teach a family of four girls, all sisters, and I'd teach each for half an hour over the course of 2 hours. And as much as they would be sometimes organized, I'd be walking around the house trying to find, they were in a big house, trying to find them. And yeah, the little one would come and bash on the piano. Oh, it was, yeah, quite fun. So giving people ideas for that, I think that that's a good way to build readership potentially. Your SEO is important. So search engine optimization, using good headlines, writing the headline for posts as things that people will search for in Google is what I try and do. So there's two kind of approaches to headlines. One is writing ones that are a search. So how to teach piano when traveling. That's really badly done, but do you know what I mean? How to manage your mileage as a piano teacher or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The other thought with headlines is to produce really engaging headlines. So headlines that spark some interest or a challenging or a bit confrontational or something like that. Why the traveling piano teacher is not a job you want to do, or using nots and negatives and mistakes and things like that are other ways to do things. So I think that they all of those can lead to help getting more traffic. Also social posting. I think you already do some social work, don't you, on Facebook?
Yeah, a little bit. It tends to be off of my personal Facebook. So every time I post, it goes onto my personal feed.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone that I'm friends with, then they get to, if they want, they get a click on it. So yeah, it works out well that way.
Do you have a business page?
I haven't set one up yet. That was actually one of my questions in terms of for social media. I understand you can increase the engagement. And so it's something I'm thinking about, and I love Facebook, but it's that spiral that as soon as you're on, like, you can be on forever. So yeah, trying to, again, find that balance of if you do this, how often should I be posting? you know, and what kinds of things should I be thinking about so that I can do that in a smart way and meet my audience needs without ditching everything else in my life,
yeah,
which would be easy.
Yeah, I agree that we all have to be really careful with the amount of time we spend on social. And I'm very strict with the amount of time I spend on Facebook. And I don't, for all the posting that goes on my accounts, I don't actually spend much time on Facebook or any of them because I know it's a time sap. So what I would recommend you do is look at a couple of bits of software that can automate your posting for okay. you. And they can also regenerate posts for blogs which you've already written. Are you familiar with these?
Yes, I don't remember the name, but I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, so there's two. The one I use is called CoSchedule, and this is a blog. They've got a really cheap entry level monthly plan. It's a blog calendar, but it also automates social scheduling. I think for the social schedule part of their app, you have to pay more. So the other option is Meet Edgar, which is the one you might have heard of. Yeah, yeah. So Meet Edgar really is just a library of social posts that will repost at whatever schedule you would like to do. And so that's, you know, it's a good way to simplify the challenges you have of posting things on social, because it's really hard, particularly if you're going in there and manually typing out things all the time. It's tough.
Yeah.
I really like CoSchedule because they allow you to write a whole lot of different social comments and questions and headlines and things like that, and it just puts them with the posts as they post out. It's very, very clever.
How does that work? Like, so you have like all sorts of questions and it matches it up with the blog posts?
Yeah, so for each post that you write a whole lot of different social headlines, or you might ask a question in a post, or you might give a statement or something like that. And it matches them up. When you actually post, you know, press go on the post, it'll match them up with the image that you're using and the post that you're sending out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very cool. That option isn't all that cheap, unfortunately. So it might be something to look at for later on. But it's great to know that there are lots of automation options out there for, and not just this social too. I'd say to anyone who's in any kind of piano teaching business or trying to build online, whatever it is, look for ways that you can automate things. There are so many little software tools that can simplify your life. And you mentioned Google before, you know, just being able to share things on Google Docs and not have to print them out and give them to parents and things like that and have everyone share one document. Yeah, brilliant. Simplifying. And I think the other thing about increasing readership is just writing posts that inspire and engage people to want to share them and engage with them. I think that's probably the most important thing.
Okay.
So do some of those ideas help with the readership question?
Yeah. I mean, definitely I try to make them engaging as much as I can. Yeah. And definitely if I can figure out what everybody wants, then that's going to be a good part too. So
do you know how many followers you've got at the moment?
Approximately. 100 some. I think, yeah, about 100 some.
100? What are you saying? 100?
100 some. I don't remember what the exact number is, but.
I've never heard that. Did you say 100 some?
No, some.
Some, like 100 and some. Okay. Yeah. Like, is that some American thing I've never heard of?
Oh, no.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Well, I mean, there you've got 100 people, and I always think with, you know, groups of people that are at a webinar or an online presentation or reading a blog, you've got 100 people. If that was 100 people in one room, how cool would that be? You know, that's a serious number of people that you've already got. So to be able to connect with them and ask them, you know, why are they interested in your blog? What have they found really useful so far, and what would you like them to do? I think that'd be great.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I was just trying to find it on here. I don't even know what it is. Anyways, okay. So in terms of that, yeah, I mean, I think those are like the big ones. Social media, I like that. Yeah, I can kind of automate that and figure that out. In terms of selling products, store on your own sites, teachers pay teachers, PayPal. There's advantages, disadvantages to every single one. And I've been kind of checking out people's sites. And yes, yeah, some people do, it's kind of every single different kind. So I think when you're just starting out, is there any ideas that you might have?
I went the way of doing it myself. So I did it on my own website. I got a plugin that allowed me to sell digital products, and I was able then to take all the revenue for my own business, rather than, of course, on these other sites, you're then sharing the profits that you make with the people that own the platform. So
yeah,
it's a great question to ask. And I think if you're on the WordPress hosted with them, then you're limited in the number of plugins that you can add, or whether you can add plugins. I can't remember actually. So at the stage that you're at now, if you wanted to put a product out there, I think the only thing you could do would be to go onto a platform, so Teachers Pay Teachers or one of those kinds of sites, to offer it out. And then you can write blog posts that send people to those sites. And as you say, there's plenty of teachers out there who are doing that. And it's probably a great way to dip your toe in the water and just see what people think and see whether there's a market for it. And then potentially you could go, all right, well, if I move across to a self-hosted WordPress site where I can have a whole lot of plugins and much more control, then I could bring things in-house after that.
Okay.
I don't think the platforms have a rule that you have to leave things with them for a certain amount of time or anything. I think it's, you know, while it's up there, it's for sale, and then you pull it down if you don't want it to be for sale anymore, I think. So that could be a good way to test it.
Yeah. I know with Teachers Pay Teachers, you have to be careful what you put on there, because it's meant for teachers within the school system.
Right.
So I try to be very careful that, is it something that a teacher in the school system could still use? But yeah, sometimes the stuff that I would like to put up there, I want to be careful, you know?
Okay. I wasn't aware of that for that site.
Yeah.
And there's certainly plenty of piano teachers putting piano teaching specific stuff up on there, yeah, that I've seen.
Definitely use in a music classroom, but I'm thinking more in terms of like studio policies and like how do you set your rates and things like that, that maybe when you're in a school system, it's a gray area in terms of, yeah. So just making sure that what I'm putting up hopefully is still following their rules. It's their platform, so they get to choose.
Yeah, totally. And maybe there's an alternate platform that could help. There's going to be a bit of a challenge. We've talked about the surveying to find out what your readers want. The other challenge you'll have is working out what to charge for and what to give out for free.
Yes.
Have you got any ideas at this stage what kinds of things you might sell, or is it totally up in the air still?
So I think like I could definitely write an ebook in terms of travel teaching at this point, doing it for several years, and I think I've figured out most of the do's and don'ts and the things to avoid so that you aren't spending all your time driving, which is always the downside. So that's something I'd looked at. Templates, guides, I tend to give those away for free. But then again, I'm still very much in the mindset where I tend to just think, oh, I will give this away. So yeah, trying to figure out kind of where that line is of at what point do I make it a paid product and at what point do I keep it free? And so if it's short, keep it free, and I haven't figured out that line quite yet in terms of
it's a tough one, and there's no simple answers, and it'll be different for every industry and all that kind of stuff. If I take my own experience in that, the pop piano teaching course, which is now part of my membership, was really comprehensive. Like it took me 7 days to film and edit. Like it was full on. However, I'd written and recorded videos on little bits of pop teaching and ideas all through the previous 2 years before that. So I think what it was a packet, a really usable package that went from start to finish of this process of teaching pop, from learning about chords at the beginning to being able to arrange it and help students do that, which kind of combined everything that I had written and made it far better, of course, and was really well videoed and all that kind of stuff. So I think you're right, the determining factor between paid and free is going to depend a lot on the quality and the size and the how considerable the information is. So a one-page cheat sheet on a studio policy is probably a better thing to give away, perhaps for an email, whereas an ebook that's got 50 or 100 pages in it of amazing information, well, that is something that people would potentially pay for. So I really like that idea and that topic as well. That topic of traveling, or the traveling studio lab, or just lab time, or the balanced piano teacher. Cool ideas for ebooks, I think.
Okay. Awesome.
All right, have you got time for a few more questions?
I guess, yeah, I'll have to figure out the logistics once I figure out what I want to sell. Because, yeah, a webinar or a kind of like online training like what you did, maybe down the road, maybe I'll do that. But then I think I'll have to figure out the logistics at that point. But and then, yeah, automating processes. I know we've talked a bit about that already. I took your advice, created themes for each month. I've been working on batching things so that I can create all at once. I found when I did that, I went, oh my goodness, my posts are going from one into the another, which I hadn't even thought about that before. But when I was writing them, I went, oh, and in the next post, I'm going to be telling you about this. So that was very cool. But yeah, it's going to be a busy summer for us. And I want to figure out how I can automate and how I can think ahead in terms of what I'm going to do, because I know I'm going to need to take a step back for a while there, for a few weeks. And yeah, any advice on automation? Which is a very broad question, I know.
It is. The conversation, this whole podcast has come out of conversations that we've had in the forums. And I remember talking to you about the batching of content. So trying to write posts at the same time, just set aside 4 hours when the boys are out of the house or whatever it is and just write. It is a great thing to do. If I could batch more podcasts, if I record solo podcasts, I'll tend to do a couple in a row, although they're quite tiring. So I can't do 10 of them in a row or anything like that. So I think you've done the right thing there. Theming months, if you're a blogger and you're listening to this and you'd like to grow things, then theming does provide a really clear structure to what you're writing about. And I've done that for 2 years now, and it's going really well. It does give you real structure around what you're writing. So that's great. So you're doing all the right things so far. I think automation-wise, definitely finding something to schedule the social posts, I think, is really, really good. As for the actual blog, the process of blogging, there's not a huge amount that you can automate, unfortunately, when it comes to writing blog posts. So there's processes you can use, and the only thing that you can really do down the track and you can look forward to or look towards doing is hiring people, so freelancers from around the world, because you can find them online very easily now through sites like Upwork, finding people to be able to help you do things like create the graphics. So one of the first jobs that I got someone to help me with when I was blogging was doing the graphic design work, because it is just another hour's worth of work. And it's a little bit like Facebook. You go into some software like Canva. If anyone is looking for great software, I'm not sure if you know of Canva.
Canva.
You love it. Oh, it's just
I actually did a tutorial on it on the blog do your own customizable recital program.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Okay. Well, we need to share a link to that in the show notes for today, definitely. Canva, but, you can spend so much time tweaking and, oh, this doesn't look quite good.
We had a conversation, I remember.
That's one simple idea of something that you could give to someone else. And I'd really like to encourage teachers, even if they're not building an online business, just in their studios, to realize the world has become a lot smaller when it comes to work, and there's nothing stopping any of us from hiring someone in another country on the other side of the world for whom a reasonably small amount of money to us is a huge salary to them and helps them support their families. Finding those people and getting them to do things in your blog that helps you. So it's not automation, but it's outsourcing that really, really helps. And I actually created a video for our Inner Circle members about how I use Upwork to find people to help me with things that I'm doing on the blog. So there's definitely some tricks about interviewing and things like that to find people online. But if you haven't watched that video, that could be useful to you. Maybe not right now, but down the track, as things grow and develop and you realize that really you should be spending your time writing more posts rather than wasting time in Canva, that could be a good option for you.
I do like writing. So yeah, I mean, definitely. And yeah, Canva, since we last talked, I've gotten a lot better about it and I don't stress so much about my font size anymore and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I find that one, Canva's actually been the easy one, but yeah, just trying to think of what I need to focus on and what I should be, I don't know, maybe handing off eventually and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, just trying to work out what your core skill is and what you love doing as well, and trying to hand over repeatable tasks that someone else could do. And particularly in software like Canva, I think you have to have a business account. It's not that expensive though. You can actually set up templates. So you can say, so rather than choosing your fonts every time, you go, this is my font, or these are my two fonts, and they're all in the template.
If you are wanting a workaround around that, because you can have multiple folders, what I often do is I just copy whatever it is that I want, and then I can just change the color, and I can change the wording and the image, and then all of a sudden I have a whole new thing. It looks like it's part of a whole series. And yeah, it takes seconds versus before when I used to have to do everything.
Yeah, from scratch. Yeah. And we all start out that way, but we get a bit more clever later on.
We learn.
Yeah, that's right. I was also going to say too, just on building traction and interest and engagement too, consider doing different types of posts and different types of media. So including videos, whether that's you at the piano or you talking to the camera, screen recordings of you showing people how to do something on an app could be great. Embedding YouTubes, getting thoughts from other people in the industry. So other people who have traveling labs and doing a little roundup post for them. So you could ask them all a question, you know, what's the most annoying thing you've solved or something, and they all give their opinion. So something like that, cool. I don't know. So just changing up the types of posting that you're doing for anyone who's doing blogs, I think that's a great thing to do too.
Okay.
All right, I reckon we've got time for just one more very quick question, or have we gone through, have we exhausted your list?
Well, I think probably my only other question is, so in terms of how do I maybe better change things so that it's the blog is reflecting the ideal audience and that I can maybe make that a little clearer. So yeah, any ideas?
Good question. Look, it's really, when it comes to your blog, I think when I went to it just before this interview, because I hadn't been on it for a little while, actually remind me, I've just got a couple of other little, tiny little bits of feedback for you. I didn't get that philosophy that you were just telling me about before. And so I wonder whether your landing, at the moment your landing page, the page which is theunfinishedlesson.com lands on, is a blog, a list of blog articles. What you might like to consider doing is actually creating a static homepage so people can land on that and see what you're all about. So photos of you, your studio maybe, kids, and your philosophy, what this blog is about. Because to look at it, the first thing you see above the fold, so before scrolling, it's a great looking website. It looks fantastic, but does it tell me what this is all about? Yeah. So it says the unfinished lesson. We never really stop learning. And there's a box on the right, which is probably the strongest thing your eye is drawn to, which says keep learning as teachers. Like, I love all this stuff, but yeah, maybe making that clearer could help.
Okay. No, that sounds good. Oh, there was another question, but now I forgot it.
Well, while I'm on your site, just one quick thing. When I really like that you started doing opt-ins for downloads to get people's email addresses. That's great. So you can keep in touch with them and support them. When I clicked on it, because again of the WordPress hosting you're on, you're using the Aweber kind of widget. So I click here to download your free Surprise the Teacher Challenge. Fantastic. Really, really cool. And I think it's a little bit unavoidable, but what pops up then is a join our community to receive your free tool from this article. So I just wonder whether the wording of that, you could flip it around. I mean, the reason I clicked on that was to get your free article. So I would say to get instant access to your free article today. And I wouldn't worry about anything else on that. Because you don't want to confuse people.
Okay.
And I think most people realize that when they give their email, they'll expect an email response, and you can talk to them in that first email. Oh, hey, I've just connected you to my list, and if you'd like to continue receiving these, then you can do that there.
Okay.
That was my only little thought. It's a small thing, but in order to increase your conversions of those, I think that's a good idea.
Okay. No, that's a really good thing. You were saying, okay, philosophy, static page.
Yeah, I think a static page for your front would be good, because you can really tell people what you're all about and show them, rather than a blog scroll or roll there. Yeah, I think that'd be a good thing to do.
That's the more I think about it. I think my thinking has changed since I first started in terms of what I write about. I think it's different than what it used to be.
And it will continue to evolve as well.
Yeah.
Because I chose my name as my domain, I've kind of avoided that. However, if I'd written a domain name when I started, it would have been how to teach boys piano or teaching the blues piano or something. That's what my domain, because that was what I really started talking about at the beginning. So, these things do change over time, and it may not be something you need to worry about now if you can get the front page really clear. But perhaps if you move to a self-hosted, you might consider changing domain. I don't know. It's a big question, and changing domains is a bit of a pain. So,
and that reminds me of what the question was. So you were saying put pictures of my studio. Because I go to my students' homes, I still have the photo and video release form. But because my studio name is one thing and my blog name is another, don't I need a legally... I don't know if I can actually be putting those photos on the other one.
Oh, you've got a separate blog for your piano studio?
Yes.
Separate site? Yeah, okay. Okay, so no, I would in that case keep the unfinished lesson as your more your business blog, and perhaps photos of you teaching or you at the piano or something that shows us what you do. You in the car, listening to podcasts, I don't know. So I would retract what I said about putting photos of your kids' lessons on there potentially. But that said, having video of you teaching something, if that's helpful to what you're trying to get across to your readers, that could be really, really cool. And with parent permission, I think can't see that being an issue.
Okay. So just make sure that I get them to fill out a form or whatever that can go over.
Yeah, or adjust your waiver to say that imagery could be used on these two sites. Oh, I've got a piano teaching blog as well. I help other piano teachers. I would love to use your photos there as well.
Okay.
And most parents are fine with that, I've found.
Okay. Yeah, they're very strict in Canada, so I want to make sure that whatever I do legally, I'm not infringing on anyone's rights or anything like that, that the parents feel comfortable. So...
Well, I don't profess to know the laws in any country or be giving legal advice. I would say that the way I run things is generally if the parents are okay with it and they have, you get written permission from a parent to use a photo of their child and they know where it's going, that's pretty good coverage in my opinion.
Okay. No worries.
Without giving any legal advice. Disclaimer.
I attended business classes at the library and they always start off with, we are not giving legal advice. I'm like, You're the legal counsel. Like, I mean,
no, no, there's lots of things that they can't say. That's true.
Yeah.
So, look, has that been helpful, Rosemary?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's given me an idea, of, even just on my end, how I can change the focus a little bit so that I'm clearer. And then hopefully that helps the people that are reading as well in terms of what they can expect.
Sounds good. So should we finish with an action step? What do you reckon you'll do? What's the first kind of change or the thing you're going to start considering first?
I think probably changing the first page so that it's clear as to what it is that I'm passionate about. There's some of the information on the about page, but then maybe updating that so that it reflects the focus I have now versus the focus I had a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds great. Well, I'm so happy for what you're doing and the reasons behind it. I think it's great. And I know there's a great need out there for it. Other teachers are going to find it really, really helpful. So for anyone who would like to read any of Rosemary's fantastic articles, they are at theunfinishedlesson.com. You can find out more about her there and on Facebook as well, right? Through your... You've got the personal, that's a personal page though, isn't it? Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. So look, episode transcript, all this show notes, all that kind of stuff is going to be at timtopham.com/episode91. And next episode, we're going to be continuing the business theme in my interview with Michelle from a group called Studio Expansion. And if you've been a piano teacher online for any time on Facebook, you may well have seen one of her ads come up about the work that she's doing. She's an entrepreneur helping other performing arts studio owners build and grow their studios. She's got amazing resources and insights, and I know that you're going to have a great time hanging out with me and her next week in episode number 91. Until then, thank you very much for listening, and thank you, Rosemary, again for all your great questions.
Thanks, Tim.
See you later.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.